listening to Regional Originals, a Masters of the Stage podcast. Regional Originals is a series of interviews with some of the most exciting directors and choreographers working in America's regional theater today.
Hi, I'm M. Graham Smith, and this is Masters of the Stage Regional Originals brought to you by the SDC Foundation. Our guest today is Jeremy Cohen. Jeremy is in his ninth season as producing artistic director at the Playwrights Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, one of the premier development organizations in the country. He previously served as associate artistic director and director of new work at Hartford Stage from 2003 to 2010, where he also directed several premieres. He's also the founding artistic director of Naked Eye Theater Company in Chicago. He's directed at Actors Theater of Louisville, Alley Theater, Alliance, Baltimore Center Stage, Dorset Theater, George Street Playhouse, Goodman, Kansas City Rep, McCarter, Mixed Blood, New Victory, Only Theater, Open Fist, Repertory Theater of St. Louis, Royal George, Steppenwolf Theater, Theater J, Theater La Di Da, Victory Gardens, and Workhouse Collective, among many others. He has directed workshops of plays at the O'Neill Playwrights Conference, New York Stage and Film, Pasadena Playhouse, Denver Center, Portland Center Stage, ACT New Strands, New Harmony, Bay Area Playwrights Festival, and Woolly Mammoth. Jeremy, I think of you as the new play whisperer of America. You are also a playwright, you're married to a playwright, and your record of service to the emerging playwrights of the American theater makes for a profound legacy of important work. It brings me so much joy to be talking with you today about new plays, and actually we're here at South Coast Repertory Theater during the Pacific Playwrights Festival of New Plays. So this is a really wonderful kind of new play moment. Thank you so much for joining us, Jeremy.
Thank you for having me.
So the first question I want to ask is where you grew up and how did you find the theater, or how did the theater grab you?
I grew up in Western Massachusetts, in Amherst, Massachusetts, for the majority of my childhood, and lived outside of Hartford, Connecticut in high school. So I'm a New Englander I come by it honestly. And I mention Amherst also because I think about great people, the amazing writers and directors that have come from that place. Lucy Thurber and Annie Baker, and a legacy of others. And also the whole Berkman family. I think about Len Berkman, who is sort of dramaturg to the stars and has worked with so many writers over the years, and Len and his son, Zach, who I also went to college with. We used to play soccer together in Amherst when we were little. So I think somehow there was something baked into me a little bit early on that a life in the arts was a thing of value. It wasn't necessarily how I came to it through my own bio family, but who are also lovers of the arts in a way. But I would say I came to creativity. I don't know about theater,
okay. But
I came to creativity by looking at the world around me and always curious and always gazing about other people's lives, which either makes me a 6-year-old creepy stalker or the desire to study kind of sociologically how people interact with each other in the world.
Was there like a piece of art that you remember changing you or like kind of flipping a switch for you?
I probably further along in high school, so I graduated high school in 1991, and so just before that was when Robert Mapplethorpe's piece was out, and it was it had come to the Wadsworth Athenaeum in Hartford, which was a sort of an art institute that had a huge history of sort of very progressive and provocative art over the years in different ways, different collections. I hadn't come out as a gay man at that point, my senior year in high school, but we went at the same time as the Mapplethorpe was there. Andre Serrano was doing a lecture on his Piss Christ piece. And then everything with Karen Finley was happening around the country. And so the first time that I really... really, really got in trouble with the cops, which I think intersects directly with how I found a connection with creativity and art, was very much around that work at the time. There was something where I thought, that the voice of these artists was redefining the way that regular people were having to look at themselves and others. And then also there was something about being othered, something about standing outside of norm culture that was super hot to me. And from a, like, I belong there, I've never belonged.
Yes.
And so now the circus has come to town. And I belong in the circus. That's where I belong. That's my family. Yeah. Yes, I've found them.
And there's a push in those works a little bit too. They push you. That's interesting. So now you are the producing artistic director of the Playwright Center. You have been for...
It's the end of my 9th year. Yep.
And just tell us a little bit about, like, the philosophy about developing new plays at the Playwright Center. What are the values that guide the work? What practices do you employ? This whole season's about directors who work on new plays, and the Playwright Center is one of the important places in America where new plays get made.
Yeah, so the Playwright Center is in its 47th year this year, so we're nearing our 50th anniversary. Lots of exciting things going on. I have the great... privilege of following in the footsteps of Pete Carl, who ran the Playwright Center for 11 years in an incredible way, and is now obviously doing amazing things in the world, and a number of other amazing writers and artists over the years. I would say the philosophy of the center that probably I take both out into my artistic practice in the world, and also let it sort of come back and then reinform what we're doing at the center, is to always put the playwright at the center of everything. So we, instead of talking about ourselves as a sort of art service organization, we talk about ourselves as an artist service organization. So then really the play development becomes the manifestation of our commitment to an artist. So to invite in, I'm trying to think of writers we were just hanging out with, right, on the terrace at Pacific Playwrights. Someone like Lily Padilla, someone like Deepika Guha, Meg Moroshnik, who I was just sitting with, and to say, we're here actually to look at a body of work that you want to develop. There is total safety in how you want to develop the work. It is about how you guide the process. So what I usually like to say to all the writers when we're inviting them is, you know, welcome to the Playwright Center. You are the artistic director of your time here. Mm. So you're going to really guide how we spend the dollars on your work. You're going to guide who the artists are that you're going to be collaborating with. You're going to prioritize what your needs are in the room. And we're going to provide those things for you to the best of our ability. At this point, we're serving a bit over 2,100 playwrights a year around the world. And we develop a little over 75 new plays a year, so through workshops and different levels of development. We have 350 students that we teach through our New Plays on Campus program at universities and colleges around the world. And everything is growing about 15% a year. We're growing right now. All of that to say, our job at any given moment is, yes, to develop a play, but it is always to go back and say, if we have a question, pick up a phone and call a writer, because they will probably have, if not the answer, they'll have an answer. And I would say that many decisions that we make, most strategic practices that we have at the center, including my interview for being hired there, were to say, I would like to sit in a room full of different writers and theater makers who approach making work in very diverse kinds of ways, aesthetically, formally, etc., and ask some questions and get some feedback and also put them in conversation with one another.
Yeah.
So that instead of us thinking about leading the conversation, it's sort of, again, centering the artist, and then everything else emanates from there.
What do you understand, like, the word or identity of playwright to be in this particular moment? Is it somebody who writes words on paper? Or, I mean, are you thinking about other ways of seeing somebody as a playwright or a playmaker? What is inclusive in the way that you think about that?
Well, I think it's exactly as you just said, which is, so in order to think about, so if inclusion in particular is the word that for us right now, whether we're talking about fundraising, whether we're talking about teaching, whatever that is, we're always saying, who feels like this space is for them,
yeah,
and who does not feel like this space has been made for them, right? So what's tricky about running a place in real terms called the Playwright Center is that word alone carries, it's loaded.
Yeah.
It carries a lot of very specific centric history to it. And I think some of the ways that manifests is it looks like a very specific kind of person. And some of it is also that the work behaves in a certain kind of way. So one of the things, we don't actually choose the writers who are the 45 writers on fellowship and our core writers with us. We have amazing panels of people choose those writers for us, which are a wide range of theater makers and writers who do that. One of the things that we say to them at the beginning is, you know, we're asking you to look at each of these writers who are presenting themselves for these opportunities on their terms. They've presented themselves on the terms that they feel most confident with.
Yeah.
And so just trust that it's our job as an organization to show up to that artist.
Yes.
So if that means that they're writing on a laptop in a coffee shop and they don't need any writing days off, great. If it means it's a new parent who needs to come to the Playwright Center and clear headspace to have generative work time and then go into a room, fantastic. Oftentimes when we're making more interdisciplinary work, I would say, and I still think of like what the role of the playwright is in all of this, at the center of it, is sometimes people will say, actually, I want to show up and work with just my composer for 2 days, and then I need a day off for writing, and then I'm ready for actors. We've made a couple of like breakbeat pieces, hip-hop pieces, yeah, with Idris Goodwin, I think about, for example, who is so brilliant at designing process. And is such an amazing artistic leader. Thank God he's also, yeah, an artistic director now. But, you know, he's really brilliant at thinking about how to self-advocate for what he, not only what he needs in the room, and this really reflects the Playwright Center, but what he wants in the room to learn from.
Can you talk a little bit about how all of those values and practices that you've put into place at the Playwright Center and practice at the Playwright Center, how you bring those into the field with you, let's say when you're away from the Playwright Center and you're at a new play development festival or directing a work for the first time and you're like, you've got a production to look forward to in 3.5 weeks, how do you employ some of those values in the way that you work as a director?
I always joke with my agent that I'm like, must be such a nightmare guy for her. Because I'm this combination of having worked for a bunch of years in producing theater and now also working for a bunch of years sort of in an artist service organization. And so it's like, so for me, when I'm going to work on a new play on a production as a director, a lot of the first questions, that's all for me, it's how do you start baking what are the ingredients you're, mm-hmm, going to bake with, right, to make these meals that we want to make as directors. And oftentimes for me, it's sort of ensuring that that process involves the playwright every step of the way. So when the production manager is setting up design meetings or production meetings, have I communicated to the production manager for me as a director? It's important to me that the playwright's actually on the first two calls, and then we've talked about that. She and I have talked about that
That's
together,
so
and then we've moved on. Or casting, oftentimes casting directors will call and say, great, when are you free for the dates? Well, if it's a new play, I'll say, great, have you asked her, the playwright, if she's able to make it? Because obviously,
yeah,
she would need to be with us on those days to be in rehearsal.
Yeah.
Those things, those practices are not for me just about including a writer as they help build out the vision of their work, especially in a first production, but obviously even with a second or third production. But also because I think it's partially our job as directors, because we are conductors of process.
Yes.
To be able to, there's so many great production managers in the world. There's so many great casting directors in the world. There's so many folks who are engaged in that which is the making of a new play. But oftentimes I find at theaters, and I experienced it working at producing theaters myself, there is a bifurcation. Marketing and development feel really detached from the process, the art making process. So for me, it's always about how are we bringing people together in a room. I was just on a phone call with a theater I'm directing a show at this summer, and so much of what I wanted to make sure on that phone call that they were hearing from me at the top is my values, right? So it's talking about how are we having not an all white male design team? How are we talking very specifically in real terms about casting? So it was actually like rewriting some casting language around cis and gender identification and all of that sort of stuff.
Got it.
Which there can be pushback. It's also about saying, oh, you have a partnership with a university. So then what is my opportunity as a director? When is it possible for me to say, if you want students to come into the process at a certain point, or I could go talk to a class or something like that.
Yeah.
Again, how can we create more, the values that we have at the Playwright Center about transparency.
Yes.
And like removing all this weird
yep.
mystery magic stuff.
Don't look behind the curtain.
It's like, we're just people trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like that in my 20s. I felt like there was a magic, there was a book and I didn't have it and I wasn't going to get it and I didn't know how to read it, even if it came to me about how you're supposed to have a career. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of what's really critical for me now in my own practice and all the parts of my life is move that curtain away.
Yeah.
And just say, hi, I'm Jeremy. This is my practice. You might come in on a Wednesday when I might like make a bad directing choice on stage and realize I've overblocked that scene. Let's watch that and learn from that together.
That's amazing. And to know that like the proactivity, it seems like, is really important on that first phone call or in that first conversation to establish what the important values for you are as the process goes forward.
And I use really clear language. We were talking about this a moment ago, and I think a number of our colleagues are really thinking about how to be mindful that sometimes we try to be so generous and we upspeak in order to ask questions and we do all of this stuff that actually obfuscates clarity.
Yeah.
I'm aware that I do it myself sometimes. And I think part of my practice, especially when we're talking about things around inclusion, especially because my body is a cis white male body. So if I am in a position of power in a room where I am someone who is making choices and decisions along with a team of people, I feel like I owe clarity and transparency and really clear language. So in a first conversation with an artistic director and a production manager, I'll say, great, let's start talking about designers, or let's start with the playwright. Let's talk about the cast. For me, especially when I think about design team, like, I don't live in a world with a bunch of white men. I live with all the people in the world, and I want the voices and impulses to be from as many different people who approach and think about art making as possible in a room. I'm better. I will be a better artist when I've learned more and collaborated with people who we all come at it in different ways.
Since we started talking about designers, how do you like to work with designers? Like, when after you've selected them with your playwright and with the producing company, how do you like to begin a conversation with your designers? Is it very different from play to play?
It feels very different from play to play. And I think part of that difference, not to be reductive, but part of that difference for me is about whether it's a first time production,
mm-hmm.
if it's a first production or not. Because so much of what I'm inviting design teams into with a first production is to be excited about this writer, depending on where they're at in their writing and where the play is at, and about, I love really working with sort of dramaturgical designers. So this project I'm doing this summer and fall, there's a couple of designers that are new to me on it, and I'm so thrilled about. And one of the conversations I had with the first conversations was to say, I really love that feedback. So even though you may be, Didi, you may be like the costume designer,
uh-huh.
please know that when you're watching a scene in tech, if the storytelling isn't making sense to you or there's a beat that's off,
uh-huh.
We haven't worked together yet. It would be critical for me that you say, so something has always not made sense to me about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And please don't be so monogamous about the way that we're working together that there's not that porousness there. So that's really exciting for me, sort of dramaturgical design,
yes.
designer brain. And then I think also kind of talking about, so we we won't know at the beginning of the design conversation exactly how the product is going to be at the end, but what is the kind of story we're telling? And also for me, always about like, how is the audience, what is the desire for how the audience relates to it, knowing that they're going to bring their own experiences to the table. So it's something about tone. It's something usually for me about propulsion.
Yes.
I like a fast speeding bullet train when it makes sense. What are sort of the unifying principles mm-hmm. that are less like I see purple and I see sparkles, and much more this is a story about people who are ultimately in pain but desire to seek joy in their lives and are like, that's the path of this play.
Uh-huh.
So I want the decisions along the path to be, to mirror that.
We're all on board with that journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
What about actors? What do you look for when you're auditioning actors, aside from, you know, their appropriateness for the role? Is there a particular kind of actor that you love working with?
It's so interesting. Again, I'm just splitting this for a moment for the sake of this conversation between development and production. So I'll talk briefly about development and a little bit about the center. I was just talking with a director here at the festival, and I said, "Oh, how's the play going? Oh, it's fantastic. The writer's so great." And I said, "Oh, how's the cast?" And she said, "You know, they're so good. They're all game. They're really game." Mm. And I mentioned that because it happened an hour ago, and also because new play directors, you want people who are game. You yeah. want the right person so that, you know, writers are learning their plays off of great, great people. But also that kind of, again, actors in the development process who can really center the playwright and where they need to be, and maybe spending less hours in the middle of what's my objective, what's my objective, what's my objective.
Yeah.
I find to be helpful. And I would say we're really fortunate in the Twin Cities because we have the 47 years of developing massive bodies of work, from August Wilson to Lee Blessing to Melanie Marnich to, you know,
yes.
Lisa D'Amore to, I mean, it's on and on, right? And we're very fortunate that the acting community is an incredibly rigorous, game, athletic, very thoughtful, super smart community of actors. So we're really fortunate in that way. We benefit at the Playwright Center because of that.
You were just saying, like, you were going to split your answer between development and production. And one of the things that I'm just super curious about is, do you almost always want to do or feel like you need to do some sort of workshop, some sort of development thing on a new play before it's ready? Do you feel like that is crucial time for you and the playwright to get on board that same journey, or it's really just dependent on kind of where the playwright and you feel the play is? Like, how many, like, I'm just curious, like, out of all the things that you might be directing in the coming year, like, how, what percentage of them might be things that have had a development moment, and what is just like kind of ready to go out of the gate?
I don't think, I'm not sure this is true, but I think that I've never directed a first production of a play, and maybe even a second production of a play for that matter, that the play certainly hasn't been workshopped. And I would say probably like 90% of those that I've been helming in workshop mode. It is invaluable, not only because we get to work on the play together and so we have some sense of it, but I find like that trust. You have it or you don't. And I'm always connect when I'm connecting with writers at the center or outside of the center, I think we're always saying one of the most vital things you have to figure out is how you learn what notes to trust mm-hmm. and like what feedback, what's your own instinct, and that can shift play to play. And so for me as a director, I'm always aware that there's a responsibility. Like, if I was going to give you notes, which in theory is something I'm supposed to do, what would that look like? And why would those notes be there? And ensuring that the notes are always towards the play that the playwright is writing, not the play I might think it should be.
Yeah.
It's not my play. And so there is a piece of it developmentally for a while that in great hopes I am like a doula in a way.
Yeah.
And also challenging, and also like asking hard questions, and that this can be a safe place. I think early on in workshops can be like, let's see, where are you at? And tell me like, oh, I see there's a hiccup there for you.
Uh-huh.
It feels like I've heard you say no twice. Is it okay if I ask, is there something going on for you there about like, what, talk about that scene then. What is it bringing up for you? Well, actually, Jeremy, it's this whole other thing that has nothing to do with the play, but it's this whole, oh, great. Okay. Well, one thing I can offer is that I didn't write the play, you did. And so I'm a bit more neutral. So let's talk about how that scene fits into the play and does work, or let's talk about whether or not it needs to be there, or are there pieces that can get unpacked in other scenes?
Yes.
So for me, workshops are just, they're trust building.
Yes.
In a lot of ways. And then of course, that means that when we go into auditions together, or when we're talking about design together,
yes,
we're, the chances for me to mess it up by way of, I don't actually know what he or she is thinking.
Right.
Or what they're wishing for, are less. And the chances that I will be able to advocate in design conversations, for example, around their needs or desires to learn their play, I can also be an advocate in that way. So
You're aligned in the service to the play by that time because of that development work.
So for me, so development is usually part of it. You know, I feel different organizations do readings or workshops of plays for different reasons, and I think one of the things that I talk about pretty frequently, both with my like artistic leader colleagues and also with writers, is as long as there's transparency and clarity about what this moment is. Is this an audition for your producing theater?
Right.
And right. So in which case, let's not maybe call it a workshop if it feels like, probably don't do rewrites because that's actually only 4 hours of rehearsal.
Yeah.
Or is this truly like safe space where you don't even need to do a reading at the end? And those might be the two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So I think also development work and opportunity, there's so many ways to learn different things. I think thinking back last summer to Portland Center Stage, to Jaw West.
Mm-hmm.
I was working with the fabulous Emily Feldman on this play of hers that I love called Pick a Color. And we had worked on it once at the Playwright Center, and so we're now working with a different cast in Portland. And it's such behavioral dramaturgy that the other piece of it was because Rose and Portland had created this gorgeous, super safe, super playwright-centric, very intentional space, letting the actors know, reminding the directors, everyone along the way, this is for them to try things out. We actually got to live our greatest dream, which was we cast an ensemble of 8 actors and we rotated their roles every single day for the first week of rehearsal. And then sometime in the second week of rehearsal leading up to the reading, the big public reading, was when we kind of landed on things. What that enabled us to do and how Emily could then think about the writing, like in like, you know, line to line writing or bigger scene, you know, kind of what the bigger frame was, what the events were, the play, it was invaluable. So I think it can be super critical.
I'm so curious how you came up with that plan and, you know, where that idea came from to crack that nut that way.
Well, first of all, for me, it goes back to the value of ask for what you want.
Yeah.
So like what we say at the Playwright Center always is like, don't tell us what you need. Tell us what you want.
Yeah.
Let us try to get to that thing. Cause I don't know, as artists, we're always asked that. It's sort of the budget says this and the days say this and we can't afford this. Right. So with 2 black boxes and whatever, I can make a play. and so we asked for it. We just asked if it was within their practices, and what we said about the casting together, which we did hand in hand, was, who are the game actors? Who are going to, who can you cast a room full of actors? What matters to us is you cast a room full of people that are ready to play in the sandbox with us.
Yeah.
The play ultimately is about certain things about how gender expresses itself on stage. And so there are four male presenting actors and four female presenting actors, and they both play the same four roles throughout the course of the play, kind of alternating and moving in and out of space. And we had so much learning to do about, the whole play is about what is, how do we hear, we as an audience, how do we hear language when it is in a female presenting body versus when it's in a male presenting body? And how do we hear the same things? And it came right after the election 2 years ago, and kind of just everything around Hillary, everything around how we hear her, people saying, I just don't like her, why? And just hyper-gendering and the misogyny around all of that. And this was really Emily's exploration of trying to figure out how to dramatically and theatrically kind of have this event happen on stage, which is one of the many reasons I love it. And we had to figure it out. She kept reassigning lines and like, oh, actually, we need to hear male Sally say that rather than female Sally say that because something challenges us in a different way.
I really want to see that play now.
It's amazing. It's such a good play.
So you were talking just a second ago about how the actors in Minneapolis are pretty game, and there's a legacy of new work that's been created in the city of Minneapolis with that theater community. This is a podcast that's really an exploration of what directing in the regions feels like, looks like. And I'm curious, you've worked in Minneapolis for 9 years. You've worked all over the country, basically, but you've spent a lot of time also in Hartford and in Chicago. What do you feel like characterizes Minneapolis versus like Hartford or Chicago, let's say?
I mean, instantly, it would be hard to think about the Twin Cities and not think about the Guthrie. It would be hard to not think about Penumbra. It would be hard to not think about Moo. It would be hard to think about histories of theaters like Jun Lun, and like the amazing Children's Theater Company, and of course, the birth of 10,000 Things.
Yeah.
So without even blinking, those companies alone and what they have spawned, not only in their importance in the Twin Cities community, but around the country, is, I mean, Penumbra alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That legacy and that body of work. And then I think, so I think what's incredible is, you have this body of artists that's an ever generating body of artists who are living in one of the, until recently, especially one of the only affordable cities in the country that still has over 100 theater companies. So you can work, but you can also actually afford to pay rent more reasonably. So there's this sort of confluence of things there. But you have these amazing practices, the puppetry and object community in the Twin Cities, the dance community is massive and gorgeous and really diverse. I just think about, you know, Open Eye Figure Theater or In the Heart of the Beast as two of the puppet companies and object companies in town who are thinking in terms of tiny scale and the May Day Parade within the Heart of the Beast that's been this, you know, nationally renowned event for years. So I think what's incredible there is like there is this amazing range of work and how artists are practicing their work. I think about people like Steve Epp or Sally Wingert or Wendy Knox and Frank Theater or everything that Children's Theater Company has done. Lou Bellamy and now Sarah Bellamy. And that's another thing, right, is that we have our community a few years ago in the middle of all this artistic director transition, among other leadership transitions, we had a huge turnover from people who were running theaters for a long time. And so I think with Joe Hodge coming and with Sarah Rasmussen coming and with Sarah Bellamy coming and, you know, Randy Reyes was the move for a while, and more and more and more. And now with Floor at Park Square, Floor Delino at Park Square. And, you know, it's this really exciting, exciting time to see what's happening. Marcella Lorca taking over 10,000 things after the brilliant Michelle Hensley, sort of passed the baton. So we're really in the middle of we're our own little microcosm of massive seismic landscape shift.
Yeah. And what's the difference between the aesthetic taste or the audience spirit of adventure or appetite in a place like Minneapolis versus where you were in Hartford, let's say? I mean, yes, there were also different eras. We should say that they're not at the same time.
I'm going to say, with all great love for Hartford, one thing that's true about it is that it's not Hartford Stage, in addition to Theater Works and a few other Heartbeat Ensemble and a few other great companies there. Audiences or people that could become audiences didn't have 100 opportunities to see 100 different kinds of work.
Yes.
And so regionally for me, which is where I've spent most of my career, which is my favorite place to spend all of my career, I love going into a place and learning. I love hiring locally. I love meeting local, who are the people that work here? Who are the people that are going to come to the shows? You are going to teach and guide me in ways that I can't get from someone from New York, certain ways. And one of those differences has really been how many other theaters or arts organizations are thriving within that community.
Yeah.
And therefore, at the theater I'm working, how might those stories be received?
Yeah.
So the difference between the Twin Cities that has over 100 theater companies and Hartford, which had sort of, I don't know, but let's say 5 or 3.
Yes.
Or even within Connecticut that it's got Yale Rep and it's got Long Wharf and it's got all these amazing, other arts organizations and companies, but it's a smaller thing. So storytelling and kind of your relationship with an audience is just a really different animal. Chicago is over 200 theater companies, so going to theater was, going to church.
Yes. You just said that you would vastly prefer working in the regions than in New York. What is that clarity about for you?
It is partially about so I'm a romantic in a really big way, which means I just like falling in love. And there is that action feels, this is very selfish, but I feel I've worked, I guess, 3 times now in Baltimore at Center Stage. And for me, it's like I get to fall in love with the technicians who work there, who are like, oh my God, I love that carp. Or I love that draper. I'll talk about them when I go to another theater, or, we had the great, I've worked a couple of times at the Alliance in Atlanta, and Michael Wynn, who is a great leader at the Alliance for a number of years in different ways, now has moved to the Twin Cities and is working at Children's Theater Company. And I think about Michael as someone I connected with Michael repeatedly over the years. And then when he moved to the Twin Cities, I got to just help throw the doors open and welcome him.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I love. I love working in a specific place. I at Center Stage, there would be people I remember the second show I did where they were they would all come up to me after previews and be like, remember when you did that last show? And then the third show was oh my God,
Yes, yes.
And I love that. I love that. I love learning audiences. I like learning the communities. The last show we did in Baltimore was all about a love letter to Baltimore. That's what it was. We knew that Kwame was leaving and it seemed like Hannah was leaving, who were my two closest colleagues in the field. And it was I've loved working here and I don't know if I'll get to again.
Right.
How can I make a play that is for and about Baltimore in a way?
That was your musical adaptation of Alice.
Yeah, we did a hip hop, slightly draggy Looking Glass Alice. Yes, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I would love to ask, I haven't asked this question yet on the podcast in quite this way, and I guess I'll try and just be as general as I can and let you fill in the specifics, but I feel like for folks who are making a career as directors in the regions, whether or not they have the ability to kind of jump around to all the different regions as you do in your career, or if they're let's say they're based in Minneapolis, what kind of career advice? I mean, I feel like you've had such a remarkable career, starting a company in Chicago, becoming the associate artistic director for Michael Wilson at Hartford, and then coming to the Playwright Center. What has been a kind of guiding principle that you attribute the success of your career to in the way that you've made your choices?
Oh my God, I just want you to fill in the blanks now. This is the Rorschach test. I really don't know. I have to say, I look around and I still feel like, in real terms, I feel like, going back to your first question, I really see this little kid who grew up in a really broken, low-income home, a single-parent home, and there was nothing... You know, I didn't go to grad school. We don't come from money. There was just not, it wasn't going to happen. I'm also not good at school. And sorry, every teacher who might ever be listening to this. So I think somehow I always knew I wanted to work. I remember being a senior in college and hearing a lot about, like, you've got to go to grad school. And I knew that that wasn't right for me. And I also knew it wasn't possible. So for me, I got my first internship right out of school in Chicago at the Goodman as the casting intern for the year.
Yep.
And my the casting director was really a mentor for me that whole first year. And also, like, Susan Booth worked at the Goodman then and became one of my great mentors and now friends and still mentors. And and Bob Falls has become, you know, the godfather of my kid. You know, there are people in that first year that I cemented relationships with, that I'm still close to, designers I still work with, actors I still work with to that day. So there's something about, for me, I'm really, like, building things one brick at a time.
Yes.
And so I don't know anything. I would say something that Che Yu, who's been a friend and mentor for a long time of many of us, reminded me a couple of steps along the way was, you know, there's not the idea that there's a right way to do this career thing is not true. That's false.
Yes.
There are many different ways to do it. And I think that's what I try to teach when I'm teaching or mentoring or whatever now, is that we each have our own path. There is not a right path. If you want certain things, there are smarter paths to take towards that. And then also the world is changing. And so the paths are changing.
Yeah.
I think for me, the only thing that I know for sure is that, that the things that are not about my career life or my artistic life have to be in order, or I have to be in concert with them.
Yes.
So there's weirdly, although I didn't, I mean, I sort of grew up Jewish-ish, and I'm not a sort of practicing religious person. I would say that there is, if I can maybe for a moment redefine spirituality for me as being the energy that, or like value set or something that floats throughout all the parts of my life.
Yes.
So that I hire a staff who, like, all have families or want to, or thinking about, or are all practicing artists and want to pursue those things. And, like, the Playwright Center can be a place where you can come be a practicing artist and also have a job. You know, I've been sober for 25 years. I definitely wouldn't be having this conversation with you if I wasn't. That's true for me.
Yes.
And I have a son who's 16 years old, who also came in a weird, like, super fast microwave adoption that was supposed to be 4 years long and happened in 10 days. And I was just sitting with Amelia Cacciaparo, the godmother of us all, who here at the festival. And we were, what had happened is that we were the first same-sex couple to attempt adoption through the major adoption agency in Chicago. And they had told us, you know, like, we don't know how long it's going to take for you guys to get chosen. Mm-hmm. Probably 3, maybe 4 years, because for straight couples, wow, it's about 2 years. But, like, put your paperwork in now, mm-hmm, and see what happens. So we put our paperwork in, and then 2 days later, I went... I had gotten this directing fellowship with TCG that absolutely changed my life. It's how I met Michael Wilson and, mm-hmm, eventually got a job at Hartford. And I sat down with Amelia and I said to her at the end of the retreat, so this is never going to happen and it's going to be 4 years from now, but I really want to be a dad.
Yeah.
And we've started this process that they said is going to be 3 to 4 years long, and this fellowship's only 2 years, so we're totally good to go, but I just felt like I wanted to let you know. And then she turned to me as we were going for a walk yesterday and she said, and then you called me and said, you know, like 1 week later, oh my God, I'm a dad. And what do I do? And she said, you know, she was just talking about like that conversation with me, which was one of those conversations about how do we have a spirituality about this whole thing? How do we have a sanity, or what are the things that each of us need to ground ourselves into? You know, I think about your amazing partner. You're thinking about the people we walk through our lives with who are like our little shamans along the way. They really teach us. My kid has been my path for this career because I think about him and I'm like, every decision I make is like, am I going to be gone from Milo for 5 weeks or from my husband? And for me also, that is very much about the Playwright Center. It's not just a theater I work at. It is a home for me, and it is a home for a lot of people. And I take that responsibility really seriously because there's a bunch of artists there that we've made a commitment to. So it's those decisions get harder and more complex, but they also get easier. And maybe that's in some way what I'm 46 now. Like I just turned 46. I was trying to think the other day when I turned 46 what that means, and I think it's something about how can, even if the decisions get harder, how can they get clearer faster?
Yeah.
Sort of, like, because we've learned these things,
yes,
you know, together. Because you and I as friends and colleagues call each other when we're, like, wrestling with things and figure it out. So I don't know about the path to having a career, but I know that for me, there have to be, and I look at my directing and other just artists, colleagues and peers, and I watch how they run their lives and what works for them and where they struggle, and I struggle and then I try again.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I feel like that is the most profound way we could possibly end this conversation. I do want to ask you about like what projects you have coming up that you're directing in, you know, the coming months. We think this is going to air in June. So what do you have coming up? June, July, August, September, October, that people can come check out that you're up to if they want to see your work?
I mean, let's all just be praying really hard for me. I have the great good fortune of opening my bestie, Hannah Sharif's first season at Repertory Theatre of St. Louis by directing all 7 hours of Angels in America.
What?
And so I have now spent the last 2 months at least doing pre-production. It's like a whole new level of pre-production. It's a whole new level of preparedness.
Oh my God.
The places that I love to lean into instinct, or that I love to like see what's going to happen in the room, some of those just don't, it's just, you don't get to cut it. That. All the luxury. Time management, all the... but this was the thing. Sitting with a team of 8 people, figuring out tech schedule, wasn't just like us saying, where's the 8 out of 10? Where's the 10 out of 12? It's saying, what is happening to the bodies of the actors and the designers and the crew when you've achieved a 3.5 hour mountain and you are so pleased and relieved that you could probably just go get sick because you're so, everything is finally there.
Yeah.
And that was the well-behaved one.
Right.
Now you have to go into perestroika.
Right.
And it's where all the flying is and all the acrobat, it's where everything is. It's the hardest passages, I think, most challenging are in that play. I love that play. I love that second play so much. And so remembering that like they haven't said those lines of those 3.5 hours in 7 days. because they've just opened something else, right. And you've got 1 week to get to opening of that one. So it, for me, it is like, I'm so excited to just build this great team. There's so much joy in team building for me, and yeah. So that's where we are right now. We have an amazing design team, and
that happens in the fall.
We start rehearsals in late July,
uh-huh.
And the Millennium opens the end of the first week of September, and Perestroika opens the end of the second week of September, and then we do start doing marathons that weekend.
Awesome. That'll be great.
So come to see what Hanna is doing with her amazing first season in St. Louis, and also the amazing theaters that are in St. Louis that are so interesting right now, and all these other amazing seasons that are being announced by all these new artistic leaders around the country, which is so exciting.
Yes.
So great.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. This
has been such an honor. Thanks for having me.
This podcast was brought to you by SDCF, Stage Directors and Choreographers Foundation. SDCF acknowledges and extends a very special thanks to its 2018-2019 leading contributors, the David Lee Foundation, the Hargrove Pierce Foundation, the Oki Foundation, Trip Coleman, Sheldon Epps, Linda Hartzell, Doug Hughes, and Thomas Kale for their support this season. SDCF events and programs are designed to offer access, opportunity, and community to directors and choreographers at all levels of career. To find out more, visit our website at www.sdcfoundation.org.